Well, as you know, we're partway through our series on the book of Exodus. And as I was preparing this week, I thought, well, how am I going to catch you up on where we've been? And you'll know if you were here last week, Kylie played a clip of me preaching the week before to catch us up. And I thought, well, maybe I could get a clip with me in the background, with her in the background. And it all just became a little bit complicated. And I thought, you know what? If you weren't here, just go and watch it on YouTube. That's the easiest way. But basically, what has happened in week one, we learnt about the I am. The meaning of this word, Yahweh, who God was when he announced himself to Moses in the burning bush. And he said, I'm going to be faithful to my people. And then just last week, we talked about the God who delivers. We talked about the plagues in Egypt and the way that God delivered the people. So this week, we arrive at the next part in our journey, and we're going to have a speed catch up, okay? So make sure you're tuned in. If you want to have a look along, you can start at Exodus 14 or 13 or 14 in the scriptures. But basically, what has happened since last week is the Passover has happened. God says, the firstborn, I'm going to take out these people from Egypt. And so the Israelites were commanded to put blood over their doors so that the spirit would pass through. And God says, you need to celebrate this for years to come. And we know that God's people did. And then the Exodus happens. Pharaoh says, it's time for you to leave and also bless me, which is very funny line, I think. He clearly cares somewhat about the God of Israel because he asks them to bless him as he lets the people leave. And the people leave Egypt and they are somewhere wandering around. And this is what happens. In Exodus 13, 21, by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light so that they could travel by day or night. And so how cool is that? God leads and he shows them where to go as a cloud and then a pillar of fire. So it's pretty incredible, and they must have had this sense that God was with them and guiding them. But they wander around a little more. God tells them to sort of go back and forth, and then Pharaoh changes his mind. Pharaoh comes after the Israelite people, and the people are very afraid at this point. They're being chased down. And in Exodus 14, Moses answers the people and he tells them, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance of the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. And so we know the story where Moses parts the Red Sea. And the Israelites can move through it freely. And then all the Egyptians are destroyed, and that's all a bit aggressive, but we're just going to move on from that. And they get through the Red Sea. And then Moses and Miriam, they sing a song. There's tambourines, there's dancing. And so begins the wilderness journey. So all this kind of exciting stuff has happened, and now they're walking around in the wilderness. Years and years of walking around. No real hope of the promised land, I don't suspect, except that it has been promised. And I don't know about you, but for me, this concept of the wilderness is incredibly relatable. The concept of wilderness seasons in life. Life is not always exciting, is it? It's not always hope-filled. It's more often than not mundane, hard. And during this wilderness season of life, we often experience spiritual drought. We often wander around thinking, where are you in this, God? How long is this going to go on for? What's the purpose of this season in my life? And so this morning, I want us to each think about a wilderness season. Maybe you're in one right now. Struggling to see where God is at work. How long is this season going to go on for? Perhaps you're walking alongside someone who's experiencing a wilderness season. For me, as I reflected this week, my example in recent years of a wilderness season was my time spent at training college. Now, you might laugh at that, and sometimes I mean that a little sarcastically, but it's okay today because I'm not going to get in trouble. They don't do training college in the same way anymore, so I can't, right? Also, it's not being live streamed, so as long as no one dobs on me, I'm going to tell you about my wilderness experience. See, actually, when I went to college, I was in one of the first groups of people that didn't occur in Sydney. So I had to pick up my life and move down to Melbourne. And I got there and I thought, what am I doing here? I had gone from working a busy full-time job, serving in ministry, studying on the side. My life was full, it was rich, and I went to college, and to be honest, I was bored out of my brain. There was not enough going on. The schedule of study, how we were involved in mission and ministry, and I realise now some of that is about reflection and development, but at the time, it felt like there was not enough going on to occupy me. I felt like I was not connected to anyone there. I'd left my friends and family behind, stepped into this unknown land where no one knew who I was. And that's a difficult thing, right? As a salvo, you've grown up in perhaps a similar environment. You know people around you, churches around you, other salvationists around you, and you go to Melbourne and it's foreign. You don't know who all the retired officers are or who the commissioner was 20 years ago. You have no context and no connection. And I felt very lost in this season. I didn't have enough to do. And it wasn't until I made it quite some way through this wilderness season that I realised it was probably a little bit of a wax on, wax off situation. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi. You know, he teaches the Karate Kid all these mundane, boring kind of exercises on repeat. And it's not until he goes to fight that he realises that he's got the skills. That's beautiful karate there. He's got the skills to actually do what he needs to do. And I think perhaps on reflection, a little bit of my college journey was like that. I didn't love it at the time. To be honest, I probably wouldn't go back and do it all over again. But I did come out with skills, with things that I now know have set me up to do the work that I want to do today. But so often in this wilderness season, we're like, when is it going to end? What is the purpose of what I'm doing? I'm trying to follow you, God. I'm trying to listen to you, but I'm not hearing from you. We go through menial, insignificant times in our life that sometimes seem pointless. I want you to think about any wilderness experience in your life today. Maybe you're walking in it. Maybe you're walking alongside someone in it. Maybe it's something that you've just come through. And I want you to keep that at the forefront of your mind this morning as we look at what the Israelites did in this situation and what God did for them. So basically where we're at in this wilderness scene is that they're walking around, wandering around, and of course, as they do on many occasions, the Israelites start grumbling about the situation that they're in. Israelites said to Moses and the leaders in Exodus 16:3, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." They're hangry, right? Hungry and angry at the same time. Anyone get hangry? Yep, a few people. So this is where the Israelites are at. They're very dramatic. "You've brought us out here to starve us to death, Moses. How rude of you." And so they start grumbling towards God and towards Moses. And God actually comes and he answers and he meets their physical needs. What happens is he says, "I am going to rain down this manna, the bread and the quail, and you are going to go out and you'll collect what you need and you'll bring it back and you'll eat it and you'll have enough. I'm going to sustain you in this way." In Exodus 16:4, the Lord says to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. Now, this is an interesting point in the story here, I think, because God commands the people. There's plenty of manna, plenty of quail, but what he says to the people is, you just need to go and collect what you need for that day. Just that day. It's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes when we're in the wilderness, sometimes God just says, I'm going to give you what you need to make it through today. And then I'm going to give you what you need to make it through the next day. We might not be able to see the end of the picture in the wilderness, but God gives what people need for today. And so they have enough food, their needs are met there, and then they begin to discover they don't have enough water. There's no water to go around. And in chapter 17, verse 3, the people were thirsty for water there, and you guessed it, they grumbled against Moses. They said, why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst? Dramatic, once again. Why have you done this, Moses? You're going to make us all die of thirst. We would have been better off back with the Egyptians under oppression. And so God says to Moses, well, strike that rock over there. And so he strikes it, splits open, water flows from the rock for the people to drink. This next miraculous sort of act that comes from God, and God gives them what they need to survive that moment. He brings them through it. And you know, we've powered through this little bit of scripture today to give us these examples. But I like how we see it fit in the greater narrative. Sometimes as we look across a whole book, we see God at work as we look back, as we look forward. And this is a very early reminder of a faithful God to his people. Theologian Walter Brueggemann says this, at the center of the narrative is the faithful, powerful intervention of God. The story is told as a witness of faith in order to place God's powerful fidelity and attentiveness as the middle term of the whole human drama. As life is moved from hunger to fullness, from thirst to water, and then from blindness to sight, from leprosy to cleanness, from poverty to well-being, and in the end, from death to life. See, God is always moving people on this journey, and he always sustains. Our God sustains. He sustained his people in this moment by taking them from thirst to water, from hunger to fullness. He gave them what they needed physically on the journey. And today we're talking about this God who sustains, so I thought I better define what we mean when we talk about this word sustain. And sustain, to sustain is to support, to hold, to bear up from below. To sustain is to bear a burden, to undergo experience or suffer, to endure without giving way or yielding. You get the picture. A God who sustains, a God who helps people to keep going, to get through this wilderness season. And in Psalm 54:4, we read, surely God is my help. The Lord is the one who sustains me. And we read throughout the Psalms and in the Old Testament, often the reference to God as sustainer. And the Hebrew word is shemach. And this word in the Hebrew means to lean, to lay, to rest upon, support, to lean upon. So this story, I think, serves as a reminder to us, God's people, that he will sustain us. But I don't think many of us in our wilderness journey are asking God to rain down bread and quail, right? I don't think that's what most of us need to sustain us. They were what God's people needed at the time. But I think for us as God's people today, often what we need to sustain us in the wilderness is not something physical. Often we need God to speak or to uphold us. I think often it's this process of this word shemak, to lean, to rest, to lay. Sometimes we need God to support us, or to allow God to support us, to lean in to him and what he offers to sustain us. Sometimes God says, well, I'm just going to give you what you need for today. Might not be time to fix the entire situation, but I can get you through today. And don't worry, just in case you were wondering, this prayer for sustenance, it doesn't have to be eloquent. It doesn't have to be beautiful as we ask God to sustain us. Because actually, in this story, God's people didn't pray an eloquent prayer. God's people complained, they whined, they grumbled. And if that's where you're at today in the wilderness, that's an okay place to be. Because actually they're grumbling, they're whinging, they're complaining as they voice that God came and met them where they were at. And I want to say this morning, don't not lean in because in the wilderness you feel hurt or lost or mad. Our God is there and he wants to sustain us through that. He wants to meet us where we're at. And so we move through in this story. Their physical needs have been met and we move along, and then they start getting attacked by other people. We read a story of the Amalekites who come and attack the Israelite people, and the Israelites are not winning in battle, so there is a command to go up on a hill and Moses is to raise his hands, and when his hands are raised, they're winning. When they're down, they're losing. So some people, they help him, they hold his hands up, and they defeat the Amalekites. The scripture says that they are annihilated, again, a little bit violent, but actually proving that God is coming through with his word, that he would protect his people, that he would deliver them. And so then normal life seems to sort of set in, right? Their wilderness life leads to quarrels, to disputes, as with any, I suppose, community that are living together. And so Jethro comes and visits Moses. This is his father-in-law. And he comes and he visits Moses and he's delighted about all that the Lord has done through the people. But he stays with Moses and he observes Moses' day today. And he observes Moses sitting as judge with all these people around him all day. And he is solving their problems, sorting out issues amongst them. And then we read in Exodus 18:17, Moses' father-in-law said, "This is no way to go about it. You'll burn out and the people right along with you. This is way too much for you. You can't do this alone." Moses, you can't do this by yourself. This is crazy. You need other people along the journey. And I wonder if Jethro was there looking in at your life today, looking in at your wilderness journey, is he saying, come on, this is crazy. You're trying to do it alone and you can't bear the load. Let some people in. Let some people help you. And so he gives some advice to Moses. He says, they will be responsible for the everyday work of judging among the people. They'll bring the hard cases to you, but in the routine cases, they'll be the judges. They will share your load and they will make it easier for you. If you handle the work in this way, you'll have the strength to carry out whatever God commands you, and the people in their settings will flourish also. He says, share the load, Moses, and you will have the strength to keep going. And so this is the second part of God's sustenance, is that actually God's people sustain. And this is twofold, right? Because firstly, as people walking in the wilderness sometimes, we need to have the humility to ask for help, the courage sometimes to share our wilderness journey with other people, to say, I can't do this anymore. I'm struggling. I'm struggling to hear from God. I'm struggling to receive God's sustaining grace in the situation that I am in. Would you help me to see it? And the other element of this is that actually when we're doing good, when we're out of the wilderness, when we're in a hope-filled, exciting time in our life, that we might journey alongside someone else. Sometimes when it's hard for people to connect with God, we can be Christ to them. We can offer to share the weight of their burden. We can offer what might sustain them in that season of the wilderness. Sustenance comes in lots of different forms. But the beauty of being in a faith community like this is that we can journey together. We can share the load with one another. So our God sustains. Our God sustains, and then God's people sustain. And we have the opportunity to ask God for his sustenance, but also to ask others to help sustain us in the journey. And you know, as I do lots of the time when I'm researching for a sermon, I'll often go down a bit of a rabbit hole. And if you've ever preached before or written an assignment, you'll know what I'm talking about. And this week, I got hung up on this word sustain. And actually the word sustainability. And when I did a little bit more research, and if you Google the word sustainability, you'll see that in our modern world, lots of people are talking about sustainability, especially environmental sustainability, so that we might go the distance, so that our world doesn't crumble in the future. And so I read about all these different models of sustainability. Incredible tech companies that have these brilliant inventions that are going to reduce their emissions, make them way more sustainable into the future. And what I realised as I researched on sustainability is that actually we've rushed into the quick fix for so many things in our world. There's been a problem, we've solved it, we've done it quickly, and we haven't thought about the long term. And now we're trying to figure out how we might be more sustainable. But you know, everything I read about sustainability, all these examples, just showed me that sustainability is actually really hard work. It's harder to live in a sustainable way. It's more complex, takes greater effort by the people in terms of thinking and participating. It's actually sometimes hard to be sustainable and to be sustained. And interestingly, as I was reading, and you might be shocked by this one, but I was reading up about some sustainability awards that happened in New South Wales just this year. And I was shocked to read that the Parramatta Light Rail Stage 1 was awarded the prestigious Banksia National Sustainability Award in the placemaking category. And I thought, isn't that incredible? And what do we know about the light rail? It's taking a very, very, very long time. We've seen the scaffolding up. We've seen all the things. I'm waiting for the day when I get to see a test drive down the track. Might be waiting a while. I think that's what Jeff's saying. Anyway, but they have made and won this award because actually they have invested in sustainability. It's the first ever green track. I'm still not totally sure what that means, but they've reduced carbon emission by 80,000 tonnes during their early infrastructure work. It's supposed to contribute to Church Street and the community. There's a shared walking and bike riding path. It's got this comprehensive business strategy. There's a whole lot of jargon in there, but really what it's saying is they have built something that is going to be sustainable into the future and have low impact on the environment, high impact on the community, and be able to keep on going. But we know it's hard work. It takes a long time. And often I think that's what it feels like in the wilderness. We are asking God to sustain us, but we often want quick solutions, don't we? We want the God of rescue, the God of deliverance to come and to save us, to rescue us, to take us out of that wilderness place. But it's simply not the reality of life. Sometimes we journey in these different wilderness seasons for a long time. Sustainability is difficult. It's not instantaneous. And so we wait and we wait and we wait in the wilderness and we ask God to speak to us, to rescue us. We might grumble sometimes when we don't get what we want. But God says, I will sustain you. I will give you what you need. Or others in your life are going to give you what you need. They will share the load. They will sustain you through the wilderness as well. And this morning, we're going to reflect on some really beautiful words. Some words that will be new to most of us, but that are so appropriate for this morning's message. These words that say God is sufficient for today. God is sufficient for today. And this morning, as the team brings this beautiful song to us, I want to invite you to reflect on your own wilderness journey. Maybe you're walking it right now. Maybe you're in a place that is hard, that is difficult. You don't see where God is going to come through, and you need to ask Him to keep sustaining you each and every day. Or perhaps you can picture in your mind someone in your life that is journeying through the wilderness, and you want to ask for prayer, for courage to walk alongside them, to help share the load, to help offer grace when perhaps they can't see God at work. Psalm 55:22 says, cast your burden on the Lord and He will sustain you. He will never permit the righteous to be moved. And this morning I want to invite you, you might like to come and to kneel, to cast your burden on the Lord, to lay before Him what you're going through, your pain, your struggle, and ask Him to give you what you need to make it through today, tomorrow, through this wilderness season. As the team comes, I'd invite you to reflect, to pray, and to ask the God who is sufficient for today to give you all that you need.